Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the final buzzer sounds, we're here to wrap it up.
Why not? You're Steph Curry!
It's time for Warriors Wrap Up on 95.7. The game. Warriors Wrap Up is presented by Realtor.com, the home of home search.
John Dickinson and Matt Kolsky in our San Francisco studios. And Matt, it was a decent, albeit an ugly, first quarter for the Warriors, where they actually had a 23-20 lead. But man, the second quarter was not pretty. The Dubs get outscored 29-17. And then the third quarter was worse for the Golden State Warriors, as they are outscored 27-13 en route to a 104-79 loss at the hands of the Atlanta Hawks, who had lost 10 consecutive games and 13 of 14. No Draymond Green tonight and no ball movement, a whole lot of turnovers, and just ugly, ugly, ugly play for the nine-man Warriors.
What was the turnover number that they used to talk about with the championship teams? Was it 16?
Yeah.
I think they used to say 16 or fewer, we feel okay.
Yeah.
Anywhere, more than 16.
Yeah, around 15, I think, was – yeah. But yeah. Same difference.
They turned it over 17 times between the second and third quarter alone. And, I mean, those are the quarters that lost this game, quite obviously. The embarrassing quarters of basketball, where you were more or less doubled up over the course of two quarters by a bad basketball team. And watching tonight, this was – as disappointing an effort, I thought, as we've seen from the Warriors. And I don't know if we say some of it is losing Draymond Green again or just the lack of ball handlers in general, but sort of all the things they've done over the last five games to make us feel good about a 1-4 record in those games, none of it showed up tonight in a game that really, if it had, they could win.
And this is part of the reason why I'm a little reluctant and uncomfortable, although we all understand the circumstances. It's why I'm a little more uncomfortable when a game like last night, you have it right there and a chance to win, turns into a loss, and then in some ways it's almost applauded. Like, well, good effort, competitive loss. You keep bringing that effort, you're going to win your share of games along the way, enough to at least keep the competitive spirit going. But tonight is just kind of that quintessential game that happens a lot to most bad teams.
Right.
Now, the Warriors haven't had that happen to them as much. Like you said, they've been, I think, for the most part, competitive, but there have been very few games against other teams with a similar record to theirs where it's just been ugly and looked like it has tonight. So tonight,
when it happens against Dallas, it's there's an element of, but, well, what are you going to do?
But when it happens after you play well against a team that's a little bit better than the Hawks,
yeah,
and the Hawks come in as a team that hadn't been able to beat anybody, and I think the most disappointing aspect of tonight's game is just the fact that, look, Atlanta gives up 119 points per game.
Yeah.
And they don't really defend anybody. And tonight it was a lot of one-on-one play and just lack of ball movement.
And that's why I wonder.
No shot making.
Yeah. And look, we know these guys are not shot makers if they have to go one-on-one, with one exception. And who's that? Eric Paschal. And what did he do? 9-for-11. This is exactly what I'd expect it to look like if the Warriors play one-on-one basketball all night. Eric Paschal scores, and everyone else struggles horribly, particularly, and you know, no offense to him, but a guy like Glenn Robinson III, who's been really solid all year this year because he's been getting all his offense in the flow of ball movement, because he's been focused more on defense. And I don't want to point a finger at him more than anyone else tonight, but when it breaks down into one-on-one basketball, it just, they don't have guys for that. And this is what it's going to look like. And it's really disappointing to see, particularly in one of your more winnable games.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. If you want to weigh in on this one, Warriors with one of their uglier losses of what is now a 4-18 beginning of the season in the first 22 games, feel free to chime in via the phone lines there. It is Warriors Wrap-Up with John Dickinson and Matt Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Chilton Autobody text line open, as always. If you want to shoot us a text, we will try and comment on that as the Warriors will continue this trip after Draymond Green and Steve Kerr, and it sounds like Bob Myers and Joe Lacob all join
maybe
Draymond.
Maybe some players, too, it sounds like.
Yeah, in East Lansing, Michigan for Draymond's jersey retirement at Michigan State tomorrow.
I kind of wonder if Steph will be there because I don't believe he's on the trip.
No, he hasn't been allowed to travel yet, and I know it might get a little tricky with the timeline. He still, my understanding, has to have that surgery where he gets the pins removed before he's going to be able to travel.
Out.
But to your point, it does sound like it's going to be more than just Steve Kerr and Bob Myers and Joe Lacob. It sounds like if others can make it, they're certainly going to try to while the team heads for Charlotte, and they'll take on the Hornets in a ball game that you can hear right here Wednesday afternoon and evening on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what you have to say is you hope that can wipe the taste of what we just watched out of everyone's mouths for another reasonably winnable basketball game. I mean, probably on paper tougher than the one you just lost in ugly fashion, but the Hornets are no great shakes, and the Warriors should have on Wednesday night their most complete roster since opening night, or since October anyway. So hopefully that's enough to, because I think you're right, and I may be more generally willing to accept the lovable losing than you are.
Yeah,
but I absolutely think you're right, and we talked about it in the pregame. Steve Kerr has said it aloud that it is important to grab a win here and there.
You got to get enough wins to where you can still have games like tonight every once in a while, and it doesn't spiral into something completely ugly to where it starts to affect the culture and maybe you can't get it back.
Or even just to where it affects the culture and you don't get the progression you want out of the young guys you have.
There's a fine line between and this is why I'm hesitant, and I get it, that it's the story of this season in many ways.
It's going to be losing.
Competitive losses and a lot of the fan base believing, hey, losses are wins because of draft positioning and those, you know, things that the organization may, you know, some may think about on a nightly basis, but the players and the coaching staff are going out there obviously and trying to win and compete on a nightly basis. They don't want to hear anything about that, and Steve Kerr's even addressed that to a certain extent. But where I'm a little just uncomfortable with it is when you let a few of the games that you have opportunities to win, again, a mark of a under-talented, shorthanded basketball team, but when you let a few slip away and then you start to have games like tonight where teams are really circling you on the calendar as the way to cure their ills, like the Hawks, who hadn't won a game in weeks, and nearly a month.
You've basically got another one of those on Wednesday, because let me tell you about the Hornets' recent issues. They're 4-11 in their last 15.
No, and they got way behind tonight at home against Phoenix, and then actually had, I think, a 5-point lead in the final minute and lost it
by 5.
Yeah.
So they started 4-3. Remember that when the Warriors first played them, they were kind of rolling. They're 4-11 since then, and this is the craziest part. Those four wins, one is against the Knicks, who might be the worst team in basketball. Do you know who the other three are against?
Charlotte's wins?
All the Pistons.
Okay.
They've played the Pistons somehow three times in their last, like, 12 games, they've won all of them. But other than that, they're getting killed by everybody.
Wow.
They have lost to the Bulls, the Wizards. I mean, it is, and the Suns just now, it's ugly. The Grizzlies beat them. Charlotte has really been bad. And they're also going to be looking at the Warriors thinking, boy, we could sure use a win over somebody besides Detroit, and here it comes to town on Wednesday night.
And you can put Chicago in that category as well, not to get too far down the line. I mean, Chicago already lost to the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
They were more competitive in Portland, although they got beat. They're playing Sacramento tonight.
And that has not started well.
So, yeah, Chicago's going to be in a position where they're coming off a trip and going to have the Warriors in their building and probably looking for a little bit of revenge. Let's get to the Steve Kerr press conference following this ball game tonight in Atlanta. And the Steve Kerr press conference is brought to you by Kia.
Felt like we've really competed hard, competed well all year long, and tonight was definitely an exception to that rule. We did not perform out there.
The offensive issues, you said,
you know. I thought we were playing for ourselves out there instead of playing for each other. We were trying to dribble through traffic instead of moving the ball on. Everybody was trying to make a play instead of letting the next guy make a play. And we got frustrated, and we just we didn't have any kind of rhythm or flow to the game. And then I thought Atlanta really punished us for our mistakes and played well.
What did you think of Looney? Obviously, you didn't give him a ton of time.
Yeah, I think it was just, just trying to get him back in shape. You know, he got tired quickly, as we expected, given how long he's been out. And so this is just about him, you know, trying to find his rhythm again.
With a young team, you know, and going through a difficult season, how do you keep the morale up or the spirits up?
Well, I mean, that's the challenge, because it's not easy for anybody to lose, especially given that our team has fought really hard throughout the first quarter of the season and had some really difficult close losses. And it wears on you. You know, you want those efforts to be rewarded. And you have to keep the faith, and you just got to keep fighting, and that's my job, to keep their spirits up and turn it around.
Any feelings on Trae Young? How impressive this is the second season? You know, he took a big step. How impressive is he to you?
Well, he drew a lot of our attention. You know, we blitzed him quite a bit and tried to take the ball out of his hands. And what that does is it makes you vulnerable in other areas. So, you know, he impacted the game in a big way.
Yeah, I thought the Warriors actually early on in the game, they blitzed Trae Young and had some success with it. But really what became an issue was the offense, I thought, for the Warriors led to bad defense. I mean, the one-on-one play, bad shots, and then all of the misses allowed the Hawks to really get out in transition and get into their offense a little bit quicker and just have some easier shots. One of those cases where, yeah, good defense can lead to good offense. I thought bad offense led to poorer defense overall for the Warriors. But it's still a night where, you know, the Hawks only score 104 and they wind up blowing the Warriors out.
Yeah. And I mean, Steve Kerr said what we said at the beginning of the show, right? This was a bunch of guys who decided for whatever reason, and maybe this is the danger of a team that feels like it's overmatched talent-wise every night, getting a matchup that they feel like they can beat the other guys man-to-man, is all of a sudden everyone started trying to beat their guy man-to-man, and they stopped doing all the things that made them competitive for the last week and a half. And that's disappointing, not just because it turns into an ugly loss in a game you could have won. It's also disappointing because, I mean, the hope is that in the long term, these guys are going to take the things they've learned about playing together and pulling the rope the same direction and moving the ball in a lost year and be able to apply them successfully in minutes that matter in a year that hopefully is not lost in the future.
888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. It's John Dickinson and Matt Kolsky. Warriors Wrap-Up brought to you by Realtor.com, the home of home search. The Warriors fall tonight in Atlanta. Hawks beat the Warriors for their first win in 11 games and just the second win for Atlanta in the last 15 games, as the Hawks win tonight 104-79. We got your call of the game coming up. We're also going to hear from Eric Paschal and Kai Bowman following this one. It's Warriors Wrap-Up on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Warriors Wrap-Up on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Matt Kolsky, and you at 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Warriors fall tonight. They lose to the Hawks. It's 104-79, the final. So the Dubs now 4-18 with two games to go on this five-game road trip. Warriors now 0-3 with Charlotte and Chicago ahead. Really, it was a lot of Eric Paschal tonight, and then not much else for anybody. Paschal, 9 of 11, 24 points. He had 9 boards and 6 assists. He was a playmaker at times for the Warriors early in this game, in addition to being an efficient shot maker. I liked what I saw in 36, almost 37 minutes from Kai Bowman.
Yeah.
But it was a night where rough one for Glenn Robinson III again, as he was 0-for-7 in the first half, wound up 3-for-12. Alec Burks not knocking the ball down as he had been, 5-for-16. It was a lot of Paschal and then a whole lot of just inefficient, not quality offensive play tonight.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, this is not a team that has the talent, no matter who they're playing, to play ISO ball. You know, I think Steve Kerr would tell you no team should be playing ISO ball as much as the Warriors did tonight, but certainly not one with this little talent. Certainly not one who we talked before the game specifically about how few ball handlers there were on this team. You know, a good way to avoid having to dribble the ball? You pass the ball.
Right.
And I actually asked Lucas Alexander, producer of the upcoming show, to look something up for me. The last time the Warriors had more turnovers than assists, do you know when that was?
Boy, that's a good question. No.
Crazily enough, it was actually game 4 of the Western Conference Finals.
Okay.
When they lost it, like, in the 90s. The last time they had a deficit this big, which minus 6, was 2016.
Wow.
That is as atrocious a ball security and ball movement game as this team has played in literally years, which is disappointing.
It's disappointing considering the fact that you're playing a team that hadn't won a game in nearly a month.
And that and is noted for its lack of defense.
Currently, yeah, the worst defensive team in the NBA as far as points per game goes.
Right.
So,
and part of that is just getting up and down. But again, they got up and down. Unfortunately, they coughed up basically a quarter of their potential possessions.
And we were wondering, all right, with no Draymond Green, we knew early Kevon Looney was going to get the start in place of Green, but would there be another lineup change? Would you get Kai Bowman back in there not having Draymond Green? The Warriors did not do that. They stuck with Alec Burks, who had been the primary ball handler in terms of bringing the ball up the court, yeah. With Glenn Robinson, with Paschal, and Colley Stein. And they probably could have used Kai Bowman to kind of settle him down, I think, in the lineup tonight,
I think we
without
learned,
Draymond.
Yeah, I think we learned the difference between Alec Burks as the guy bringing the ball up with Draymond in the game and Alec Burks as the guy bringing the ball up without Draymond in the game. And I think just in general, on both sides of the ball, this is the sort of game that tells you what Draymond means outside of the stats. Like, it's kind of unfortunate. Unfortunately, it's a stupid example because we're in the middle of a lost year and we're comparing losses to bad basketball teams to one another. But the difference between a competitive loss to an Orlando team that's actually better than this Atlanta team and a non-competitive loss to this Atlanta team is Draymond Green keeps you organized on both ends of the floor. He just does. And they looked completely disorganized the whole way through, essentially.
Yeah, a lot of disorder out there on the floor for the Warriors tonight as Atlanta beats the Dubs 104-79. The Hawks led by as many as 28. Eric Paschal, though, it was another quality outing for him in 36 minutes, the 24 points, 9 boards, and 6 assists. Let's go ahead and hear from the rookie from Villanova after this one.
I feel like we're kind of frustrated, but, we're a young team, so we just got to learn to keep playing together every night. It's frustrating to keep losing, and we're all competitors. We play this game to win a game, so it could get, sometimes when they get on runs, we could get a little selfish, but something to learn from. I feel like we'll be all right. We have a day to recover and back at it Wednesday, so I feel like we'll be fine.
Does this feel like a step back, having come up with one shot against the Magic on the road?
It definitely feels like a step back. Just getting blown out, but like I said, we get the day to cover, get the day to come back and compete again. It's one thing that's great about this league. I mean, you play another game in 2 days.
I know you haven't played much with him, but Kevon, what are your first impressions of now playing with him and just sort of being around him for a while?
This is hard. It's hard for him now because, like, he's just coming back, just getting back in the flow of things. But great energy guy. I mean, just brings energy. He's been here, so he knows everything. And great guy to talk to just in terms of just learning the game.
On a personal note, you completed your first month in the NBA. You're saying, Coach, we trust you more. Your game is blossoming. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel good. I mean, I wish we had some more wins. But on a personal level, yeah, it makes me feel good. I mean, Coach and my teammates give me a lot of confidence just to go play. So that's the one thing that I really appreciate from them.
How are you guys handling the frustration right now of being in some winnable games but not getting that result?
I feel like we're fine. I mean, we're just competing. I mean, we just have to keep competing and not really think about it too much. Just go out there, compete, and play hard.
I think tonight definitely – to use Eric Paschal's words, it is a little bit of a step back. A little bit of a step back,
yeah.
Given how competitive that this team has been in games against not just other struggling teams, but they've been competitive against some pretty good teams.
I mean, think of how different this conversation would be if they had just lost 104-103 on a last-second Trae Young three-pointer, right? We'd be saying, that's tough. Once again, couldn't close, but another competitive effort.
If you have Draymond, you might win that one.
Exactly. And instead, we're just talking about something that looked totally different. There are going to be nights where they are forced into looking this bad. Maybe not in this way, but this bad because the other team is so much better than them. And I think this is something you kind of referred to last segment. It's knowing that you're going to have those nights like the one against Dallas where maybe you could have lost by 30 instead of 50, but you weren't going to be in it no matter what you did. It's that much more defeating when you have this sort of effort against a clearly bad team. I mean, even like look at the way they played tonight, the Hawks, and it's not great. Nobody had a great game. I mean, Trae Young hit more shots than it felt like he should have.
That is part of why it is so disappointing.
But Trae Young turned it over 7 times.
Yeah, and I thought when they blitzed him, it for the most part was
it
working.
Worked. Yeah, and he also took, I mean, he shot over 50%, but a couple of his shots were god-awful, just terrible 45-foot threes or wild.
And we talked about that before the game. Hey,
exactly.
Those are opportunities to to make plays on the other end and get some easy baskets, and it just wasn't happening. Sloppiness, the lack of ball movement.
And how many times in this game did the Warriors force a turnover, have a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1, and then turn it over themselves? I mean, that's just not only ugly and kind of disappointing, but not characteristic of what we've seen for the last week and a half.
Warriors wrap-up. Brought to you by Realtor.com, the home of home search. John Dickinson and Matt Kolsky with you here on 95.7 The Game. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. If you want to weigh in with your thoughts on this one as the Warriors fall to 4-18, let's go ahead and hear from Kevon Looney as the Warriors get Looney back in the fold. He had played just the first 10 minutes or so of the season back on October the 24th against the Clippers inside Chase Center. The limit for him tonight was 15. The Warriors stuck to it as he comes back from the neuropathy. And let's hear what it felt like for Looney to be back on the court.
I didn't know where my rhythm would be and how my lungs would be, but I felt pretty good. You know, each game, hopefully, I keep getting better and keep getting the rhythm. You know, not going to come overnight, but I just want to keep... keep playing hard and keep doing the right things. I know things come for me.
How long do you kind of expect that process to get back into it?
I don't think it'll take that long for me. You know, I usually got a good feel for the game, and once I figure out my role and where I can be aggressive and I'll help this team, usually comes for me. You know, maybe take a couple games, 3 or 4 or 5. And I can't foresee the future, but hopefully it doesn't take long. No, I feel comfortable where my game is at and where my body is at. Now I just got to figure out where I'm supposed to be on the court. You know, we got kind of a different system now, and as guys keep coming in, the system kind of changes. So just finding that chemistry and finding out where my role is going to be the biggest part for me.
How different is it without Steph out there, without Clay out there, without Draymond out there?
It's a lot. It's a lot different. You know, having three guys, three of the best players to ever play the game, on the court is always going to be different. Just, you know, our offense is a lot different. We're running a lot of different plays, and spacing is a lot different. So just figuring out where you're supposed to be at, for me, is a big part. You know, it took me a while to figure that out with them guys. Now I got to kind of readjust, and, it's not my first year in the league, so now I feel more confident. I know more NBA sets. I know where to be. So it's just going to take me a couple games to figure out with these guys.
How much does practice and just film work help with that versus just getting out there and
recording? It helps a lot. You know, I watch a lot of film, and I've been practicing, but, you know, it's no more you know, it takes game experience. You know, and practice now around this time of the year, you don't get a lot of scrimmage time, so I got to kind of learn on the fly. And you know, that's something I take pride in, be able to learn and having a high IQ on the basketball court and be able to fit right in. You know, that's something that I always took pride in. That's something I continue to take pride in. So I feel like it's gonna be no problem to take a couple games, go out there, and figure out how to assert myself on this team.
All right, so Kevon Looney playing the 15 minutes, 2 points, a couple of boards, a couple of fouls. And you know, Matt Kolsky, Looney became such a perfect fit with the old Warriors, right? You got Curry, you got Klay Thompson, you've got Draymond Green, even Kevin Durant. And Iguodala was going to be out there, or Looney was going to be out there. And it became he just became one of their, you know, 5 or 6 most important players on a night-in, night-out basis. You know, in a year that is about development, you know, the adjustment to, you know, using the fact that there is less overall talent on the court, it was supposed to be an opportunity for Looney to really add to his game, add to his skill set, add to, you know, maybe his offensive game with the Warriors needing more punch from different areas. I really hope that Looney gets back to a point physically where we can actually see that time pay some dividends.
Yeah.
And tonight, I mean, is a one-off. Tonight's just about getting back on the court and running around a little bit for him. So I don't take really anything too seriously from it. But I hope he gets to a point where, you know, we can see a little of the pick-and-pop game and a little of the three-point shot and a little of the touch around the basket maybe on some offensive rebounds that the Warriors wanted to see from him when they thought they were going to have a team that could contend for the playoffs.
That's all true, and he's still got plenty of time for that. And I think we will see some of that. I've always thought Kevon had a little more to his game than we got to see because of just the role he had. And he is a guy who will willingly and determinedly accept whatever role he's given on this team. I mean, I think we've seen that. So I feel the same way. I was excited to see it, and I still think there's plenty of time for it. I will say, though, you know, we've talked sort of about, boy, they've had 8 or 9 guys, and it's kind of been the wrong 8 or 9. And, you know, dagnabbit, even as they start to get players who were meaningful parts of championships back, it's still kind of the wrong guys. Because Draymond and Kevon kind of fall in that category. And look, very, very different players, very different level of players. I'm just saying, they both fall in the category of great to have next to your scoring stars. And this is still a team without a single scoring star available to it right now. So does Kevon Looney step in as arguably one of the best 2 or 3 guys available? Yes, he certainly does. Is he the sort of player that's going to have a big effect on a team like this one? I don't know. And boy, is it going to be nice, at least when D'Angelo Russell finally comes back. It's an element that there's no way for them to replace until he's back.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get D'Angelo Russell back and then just figure out a way to play with him and Draymond and everybody else moving forward. Okay, get him and Draymond, you know, Draymond doing the things Draymond needs to do, Russell being that lead, dominant, you know, ball handling scorer.
Let me ask you this.
And then everybody else can kind of fall in line and you can evaluate from there.
If Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are the only guys out, what does the starting lineup look like in your mind? Because, I mean, I think we know Russell and Draymond are in it. Is anyone else guaranteed a starting spot? I mean,
Pascal? I think Pascal would be in it. That what becomes tricky there is then you're playing Pascal at the three, which
right.
I don't love.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, you've got Glenn Robinson the third, who has he has played better when he's been a part of bigger lineups.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you if this is crazy. What if I said I wanted to start Kai Bowman next to D'Angelo Russell?
I don't think it's crazy. And I can't remember the exact game, but there was one of the home games.
They may have done that.
Where I actually had suggested on the pre one of the ones with Whitey, one of the home games where, you know, you do the road game
where they had
Whitey
does
home
guys
games. I said, you know what, I might start those two together just because it gives you an infusion of offense.
Yeah, and Kai plays some D.
Yeah.
You know, he's tenacious, if nothing else. And then I think you could start Glenn Robinson at the third and at the three and bring Pascal off the bench as sort of a hopefully explosive scorer. I actually think that's kind of an interesting basketball team.
Yes, and I think it may have been when Alec Burks wasn't quite ready yet.
Uh-huh.
So it was pretty early on in the season.
Because I mean,
you gotta just go with those two guys.
If you're healthy and you started Bowman, Russell, Robinson, Looney, and Draymond.
Yeah, I don't hate that.
It's not bad. And all of a sudden, that bench has Alec Burks on it, has Eric Pascal on it, two guys who have shown themselves to be very capable NBA scorers. And you've got all the guys who are already there. Marquese Chris and Omari Spellman and Jacob Evans would be healthy in that scenario. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not sure that's even a playoff team in the Western Conference, but it's a team that can be competitive most nights.
I think the only downside is it may hurt a little bit of the positional integrity in terms of maybe evaluation.
Yeah.
Like, that might be the lineup that you go to if you're really trying to win as many games as
right.
you can.
But if
above
you really
all
see,
else.
You want to see Ken
right?
D'Angelo play some point guard.
If somebody said, hey, you got to win as many games as you can, and that's the key to getting a number five pick.
That might be it.
You know,
yeah.
I think you may see them do that, whereas now they're in a position where I think you want to they can afford to tinker enough right now, but evaluate in a manner that makes sense for the future. So you want to see D'Angelo Russell as the primary ball handler. Maybe you want to see Kai Bowman. You know, maybe you do want to see Bowman play with Russell at some point, just based on that could potentially be a bench combination next year.
Uh-huh. Or
if Bowman is somebody that's on your roster or an emergency combination, you see how you can,
exactly.
you know, whether you can go to it or not. I tend to think of, well, who's going to be on the floor next year? If D'Angelo Russell's on the Warriors, who's going to be on the floor at the beginning of the second quarter with D'Angelo Russell? Because you know that would be a point where Curry would be out of the game and they'd be looking for
Clay, though, right?
A means to let him get rolling. In the past, it would lead you to believe that, yes, it would be Clay because Clay would sub out and then sub back in and then sub out and then sub back in.
It's going to be fascinating. Someone asked this question in the pregame, and I'm going to throw it at you now. Do you think we're already putting too many expectations on next season's Warriors?
No. No. In fact, I think there needs to be some expectations put on
See,
next
I'm with you
season's
on this.
Warriors.
I think it's a fair question.
No. Like, this isn't, oh, you know what? The 1920 Warriors won 20 or 22 and got a top three pick, and now it's...
Let's get to 35. Back into the top half of the playoff race.
It is, exactly. Yeah. It's win 50 or 52 next year and contend, and maybe even be the most dangerous team, not named the Clippers or the Lakers, in the Western Conference. So, no. This season, being as dreadful as it is going to be for the Warriors in terms of wins and losses, it's all about getting right back close to the top next year and believing that you can win a championship if things break your way.
Yeah. And I mean, the year Mark Jackson's final year, they won 51 games. Like,
yeah.
Steph and Clay should get you into the 50s. You know, if you build the rest of your team well,
you'd hope
Steph, Clay, Draymond should get you to around 50, depending on how good the rest of your guys are. So I'm with you. We are putting expectations on next year's team, but I think we have to. And frankly, if we aren't, then what's happening now is all wrong.
And you're right. And I'll be honest. To me, and look, this is just us talking here on December 2nd of 2019.
Oh,
but I'll say this. If you tell me that you fast forward to April of 2021 and you say, all right, well, where are the Warriors at the end of next season? And Curry and Klay and Draymond were all healthy, and you know that team better win close to 50. And if it wins, if it wins 47, it's probably a disappointment. And seed in the Western Conference, it's probably a disappointment.
I 100% agree. I mean, barring injury, looking at what you hope next year's team to be, I would say 50 is the low end.
Because they're going to have so many other means to get better, whether it's Russell staying or going, as we mentioned on every show, whether it's the trade exception, whether it's development of the players that are here.
The over-under before this season was 49.
Sure.
That may have been an overestimate, but that was for a team that we already knew wasn't going to have Klay for most, if not all, of the year. If the perception of this team without Klay was to win about 50 games, certainly that should be the perception with Steph and Klay, assuming health goes according to plan. So, again, yes, we're putting expectations, but I don't think they're too big or too many. I think that is – and I think if you asked the Warriors front office and they were willing to give you an honest answer, they'd say the same thing. They're holding themselves to that standard next year because, you know, that's why you signed Draymond to the extension. That's why you don't look to move any of your stars during the season or this past offseason. That's why you make the move for D'Angelo Russell to have assets, is because you're trying to win now. You think your title window is still open, and this is just a break, not the end of it.
John Dickinson, Matt Kolsky, it's Warriors Wrap-Up brought to you by Realtor.com, the home of home search. Let's go ahead and hear from Bob Myers, because he answered this question actually today on the Jim Rome Show, and there were a lot of terrific answers from Bob, as there typically are. But one of the things Bob got into with Jim was just how quickly the Warriors think they can get back to the winning ways.
I mean, it could be next year. I mean, it could be at the end. I don't know. We'll see. But it's there. I mean, the pieces are there. We have to see it. But, you know, unfortunately, we haven't seen the true, even Klay being out and Steph being out as long as he has. It's hard to really know, but I believe in those guys. Obviously, they've proven they can win and play together. But we have to now reestablish a new continuity, a new chemistry, and that takes a little time. But I'm confident, you know, it won't be what we can do next year. I'll be excited to see. But I do know this, what we will be, and I think I speak for everybody, most importantly the players, there'll be a new – I was sitting next last year at a regular season game, and a GM of the other team came and sat with me. We were watching the game. And at the end of the game, we were going to win the game. We were up 10 with about 30 seconds to go, and he taps me on the shoulder. He puts his hand out and says, "Hey, congratulations," and to shake my hand. And I looked at him and I said, "For what?" And he said, "You're going to win the game." And I said, "Oh yeah, thanks." That's not a made up story. I did not know what he was talking about when he congratulated me. I promise you, next year, Jim, when we were in regular season game, it's going to mean something. And that's just what it is. It's hard not to get, I don't want to say complacent, I don't know if entitled, but you do lose a little bit of appreciation when, I think last year, if you looked at the last 3 years at least, I bet we weren't favored in 8-9 games out of 100 and 200 games, to be honest. I mean, we weren't supposed to win 10 of them. And so you do get a little bit, that's not reality when Steve talks about reality. So from a player standpoint, the regular season, and any win will be appreciated more. I think it'll be fought for more. But I'm excited for it, too. I'm excited to see what we can do.
All right, so there you go. And I had referred to that story a little bit in the pregame show.
I think that's an overestimate of how many games they weren't favored in.
Yeah.
Like, they were favored in virtually every game. I think
it was maybe two or three a year.
Yeah. And
maybe a couple of more once they, because there were a couple of stretches where
last year there were,
but there were also a couple of stretches where they played without multiple stars,
right,
too,
that's
which
true.
I think factored into a few of those. Like, there were games where they played without Steph and Draymond, or they played with. I was going back through March of 18.
There were three guys out for a trip.
Yeah, there were about 3 weeks
point.
Where like everybody was out, I think, except Draymond.
So, first of all, I think it's worth saying, you appropriately lose appreciation for a regular season win after 5 years of doing what they did. Like, it would almost be weird if every regular season win in 2018-19 was as exciting as the ones in 2012-13 for the Warriors, right? So I think that's fair.
Yeah, it got to a point, though, where it felt like none of the regular season games meant anything either way.
And two things about that. Number one, it may have gone a little too far. But number two, that is the best argument, I think, for why the cap spike and the whole Kevin Durant situation probably was not a good thing for the league overall, is it literally did make regular season games less meaningful. I mean, it really did that to the game. And I think while there may not be a lot of meaningful regular season games for the Warriors this year, going forward into the future, as they are competitive and healthy, there will be. And across the league, there are way more important, relevant regular season games all the time. So all that's good. But the other part of that story, and of Bob Myers in general talking about when the win again and what it'll mean, is hopefully that is something that this team can build into these guys, if not for life, at least for an extended period of time. The value of a win in the NBA, what it takes to get wins in the NBA, and the appropriate positive feeling when it happens.
Sure, and there was a three-year stretch where there was no team in the league that came close to wanting to win every game the way the Warriors did. 14,
and that was when they 15, were winning.
15, 16, and 16, 17, the first year with Durant,
yep.
The Warriors wanted every possible game they could get. It really wasn't until the last 2 years with Durant, and some of it was injuries,
yeah.
And some of it was just sheer dominance,
right,
to where some of that wore off. John Dickinson, Matt Kolsky, Warriors Wrap-Up brought to you by Realtor.com. More from Bob Myers. We'll also hear from Kai Bowman and have our call of the game as we are with you here following the Warriors' loss to the Hawks tonight. Hawks beat the Dubs 104-79.
Warriors Wrap-Up continues on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Matt Kolsky, 888-957-9570. Still time to sneak in a couple of phone calls if you'd like. It's Warriors Wrap-Up brought to you by Realtor.com, the home of Home Search. Butcher Shop will be open here coming up in about 10, 15 minutes or so, as it'll be Covey and Chasky taking you all the way till midnight tonight here. On 95.7 The Game, and plenty of reaction to the 49ers game.
It's going
to
be lit if our in-break preview was any indication.
And also the big Seattle-Minnesota game, which is ongoing up north. Seattle up by 10 in the final 9 minutes, but it looks like the Vikings are driving to make that a one-score game. So we'll see what happens there. But either way, the 49ers are in a position where they and the Seahawks both control their own destinies,
yep,
at this point. Between now and the end of the season. We heard a little bit from Bob Myers in his chat with Jim Rome on the Jim Rome Show earlier today, and we were talking about how quickly the team can get back to winning.
Yes.
Right? And one of the things for me that stood out, and you talked about what stood out for you, and it was just, you know, the value of a win and understanding that and hoping that you can have some young guys, you know, appreciate it. To me, it was what stood out was the continuity and building a new chemistry,
mm-hmm,
and having to figure out, it's not, you know, we often talk about the Curry, Clay, Draymond part of it,
right,
as far as, hey, those guys are going to come back and that gets you to a certain level. We were just doing it 10, 15 minutes ago. But the thing that I think at times is, you know, we forget is how impactful Andre Iguodala was in all of that. And I know Iguodala could come back at some point, potentially.
I wouldn't bet
not
on that
this season.
I know.
But
I wouldn't even bet on that for next year.
I wouldn't really either, but
the Warriors,
it's been spoken about. Like,
it has. It's just the Warriors, I think, need more production out of their roster spots than Andre Iguodala can currently give anybody. I mean, he is best suited for a team like last year's Warriors, where the talent at the top is so incredible that if you can get 15 critical minutes and a ton of locker room support from Andre Iguodala, you're feeling good. I don't,
yes,
think the Warriors want to spend their mid-level on 15 good minutes.
Well, and to that point, I would say, well, it should be a veteran's minimum, not a mid-level.
I'm not even sure they want to spend a roster spot on that, though.
But I think they would gladly, if he would consider doing, and listen, the world we live in. I mean, Andre Iguodala basically told the Grizzlies,
no,
yeah,
thanks,
I'm not showing up.
Thanks, but no thanks, you
I'm
guys.
Not showing up. I'm taking my $16 million. You figure it out.
Yeah.
So to think that Iguodala would guaranteed be looking for a minimum and not a mid-level is probably a little bit foolish on the jump. Although, to me, you know, it would need to be that for me to have any interest in Iguodala. Let's go ahead and hear one more from Bob Myers. The big story as we shift from Monday into Tuesday is going to be Draymond Green and his jersey retirement at Michigan State, which is scheduled for tomorrow.
Good feelings.
Spartans taking on Duke, and this is Bob Myers from an interview on the Jim Rome Show. He was talking about his relationship with Draymond.
The thing I like most about Draymond is that he's flawed, and that may not sound like a compliment, but he's real, and it's hard to connect with people in this business. You know, people you work with in sports it's very egocentric. We get caught up in what is about us, and we, you know, even some of our players, they'll ask me a question, but hey, how's it going, or how's your family? And I'll commend them. I'll say, great, good job. And they'll say, what? I said, you're asking questions. You know, it's kind of like they have to work, because so much revolves around them, and they're always the center of attention. It's hard for them, and I don't want to be too general, but you got to be a human being too. And so the thing I like most about Draymond is, because we've been through a lot of good and some challenges, he's honest and he's kind of open, and he'll say, yeah, I screwed up, and he'll listen. And he's not super defensive when he makes mistakes. And so through all of the last 8 or 9 years, it's gotten to the point where we kind of know each other. But it takes years, man. I mean, it takes a long time. Everybody thinks, you know, we'll sign a player and they'll say, you know, have you gotten to know him yet? And I'll say, it's only been 2 or 3 months. It takes time. And so, like I said, with the arena, with Draymond, it takes time. But to see him honored at Michigan State, it's well-deserved. And he's a great reflection of what matters, and was a great college player. Obviously, he's a great pro. But it's hard. In this bit, like yours, Jim, you probably worked with a lot of people over the years. And we talk about, this guy's my friend, and I'll stay connected. But really, the truth is, sadly, we don't. But there's a few people you do. They come in town, and you make an effort to go to dinner with them. Draymond's a guy, 20 years from now, I'll go out of my way, just because the guy's an interesting guy. He's got a way. He's got a charisma about him. Some people don't like him, but if they knew him, if they really knew him, I think they would. And so I'm honored to go and watch him get that jersey retired.
All right, so there's Bob Myers on Draymond Green, and it's not
the whole Draymond is flawed, and that's why we love him thing.
Exactly.
I like it. Because there is an element of reality to that. I don't know. I don't think he was deliberately taking shots at Steph Curry, but I mean, it's hard to relate to the perfection that is Steph Curry at times. There is something about the imperfect hero, just that, whether it's in fiction or in sports, that is identifiable. And I think Draymond's occasional struggles controlling his emotions, Draymond's, you know, frankly, struggles shooting the ball. Like, these are all things that we can latch on to and identify with more than we can with a lot of the biggest superstars. And whatever you think about Draymond, I don't know how you could look at him and think he's not a very real person.
Right. And I mean, look at the relationship between Bob and Draymond, where Draymond gets suspended in the finals and he's over at the Coliseum watching the game from the A's game, right?
Yeah.
He's watching game 5 of the finals from the A's game, and Bob's sitting over in the suite with him.
Yeah.
And just the relationship that Draymond has with Steve Kerr, to a point where, I mean, you go back to the game in Oklahoma City where there were some incredibly just vile things said back and forth between the two of those guys.
And sometimes we make this too much of a trite thing, but that thing about you have to really have a lot of love to be able to talk to each other like that and get past it, that's very true.
Yeah,
I mean,
Kerr's going to this jersey retirement tomorrow. I mean, there is a love there. I mean, it was, you remember Draymond at the very first parade, you know, had a couple on the stage, and it's, you know, Steve hates me. Man, he bleeping hates me.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
And it's, there is this, like, familial thing with Draymond that I think it does create, and I don't want to say closer, but a different sort of bond with his coaches than almost any other player will have. And part of that is he's a coach's dream on the floor, but part of that, I think, is the kind of person he is as well.
Let's go ahead and get to our call of the game.
It's time for the call of the game, brought to you by Metro by T-Mobile.
Guy Bowman, lob, design play to Marquise Chris. Climb the ladder and throw it down, young man. Wow.
That was the most impressive inside play we've seen tonight.
Well designed play by the Warriors coming out of the timeout.
All right, so know that play tomorrow and listen to Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. 9:30, if you can correctly identify the call we just played, you'll win $50 to Schroeder's Restaurant at 240 Front Street in San Francisco. The call of the game is brought to you by Metro, by T-Mobile, the best deal in wireless. Matt, it's been fun the last 2 days. We'll be back on Wednesday afternoon, and of course you'll be back as you are every day, Monday through Friday, with Damon and with Ratto here on 95.7 The Game, beginning at 2 o'clock.
Yes, indeed. Talk to everyone tomorrow.
We'll talk to you on Wednesday, and you'll talk to the people tomorrow. For Alex Scott and Ryan Mouser, I'm John Dickinson. The Hawks beat the Warriors tonight, 104-79. Butcher Shop is next with Covey and Shasky. They will be taking your phone calls and reacting to all things 49ers between now until midnight. That'll do it. Good night, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.